Who's next?
It's the news, according to me. Oh, my. That's the leader of the free world was just in here wondering who was next. Oh, what a... Yeah. I don't know where we're going here, folks. I don't know. I don't know where the nation's going. Sorry, I just don't know. It's Monday. It is September 23rd, 8:53 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am at the home studio, not the international headquarters. However, in the next one of these next couple of days here, I will be at the international headquarters for a mega show. And what we're going to be doing is not a mega show, a mega show. We have a possibility of actually starting to do a Rumble show. That's the kind of the plan. Now, I don't know. It's going to be, we're going to start posting on Rumble, at least posting the audio, but possibly doing a video, actually the actual video, on, which is me in the studio. So it's nothing. I got some kind of a cough going on here. Probably because I haven't had enough chai yet. I need to drink. I've got my nice creamy chai with my Almond Joy creamer in it. And I've also got, as my backup cup, which is so exciting for me today, my homemade sweet tea with peaches in it, of course. That is some good stuff right there. Okay, we'll go onward and upward with this whole thing. Today's show, I've actually got a subject I want to talk about today. Unlike most shows where I just start blabbering and whatever I talk about is what's happened, I've actually lined up some things here. Well, one thing anyway. But I also want to, I don't know if I want to play this clip before or after I get into the subject matter of today. This is kind of a separate topic. A particular female pastor of a, obviously, liturgical church. She's wearing all the proper garb. I don't know what church she's from, what denomination. However, she apparently, her stance on abortion is quite radical. And really, this is what we're, if you're questioning your belief, this is, it tie into the subject today because this kind of goes along with what I think where we're at here. I keep hearing about the centrists and the people who want to have compromise across the aisle and to just get along, work together to move things forward and make things better. Just compromise and, you know, come together with the principles, you know, the ideologies. Folks, that can't happen today. And I'll explain. Well, I'll just ask the question. Can it happen? Can we do this? Can conservatives and the party that is on the left actually find middle ground and actually rule, you know, the country under this ability to just, you know, to be able to move forward? I don't have to move anywhere, but we move forward with this idea of ruling from the center, you know, appeasing both sides, both sides compromising a little bit. And we'll talk about the whole terminology of the word progressive and why people call themselves progressives a little bit. But this is more of a teaching moment. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a constitutional scholar. I've read it. I am not a, financial counselor or economist or geopolitical expert. I do have a bunch of opinions. That's what I share. So do with that whatever you will. However, we have some interesting things here going on with this country and the apparently the lack of understanding of where we are as a country, as well as where we're going as a country. And so I want to address those things. I want to address those things today, not wanna. I want to address those things today with a little bit more in-depth discussion about the things that we have. And just to educate you a little bit, maybe you already understand this, but I think it's worth saying these things because there's some people out there who simply do not understand this stuff. I hear a lot of names being called by the left and the right. Of course, the people on the right, if you're conservative, you're an alt-right racist. You know, everything about you is evil and wrong because you're a conservative, because you're a Republican, because you're on the right side, because you consider yourself whatever, libertarian, whatever you are. Nobody knows what to do. The left does never talk about libertarians because they used to be the party of libertarian. They used to be the Libertarian Party. They were the liberals. They had a little different ideas about some things. Now, that's completely changed now. That's totally out. They don't see it. That's not at all who they are. The right side has always been the more conservative party. Actually, however, they have also been more of a, I would say, they made the mistake of imposing their religious views on things sometimes, and have actually pushing in certain religious ideology into legislation, which can also be a problem. Ultimately, at the end of the day, things need to be right and wrong, and you have to have some kind of standard, and that standard is outside ourselves, and that standard is basically the Ten Commandments, or the foundation of a moral standard, which is God's standard. Unless you want to have a moral standard of your own, that's fine, but that's not what our nation was founded on at all. We're founded on a moral standard that is outside of anything that we can imagine or dream up. It's right to life, liberty, property, it's pursuit of happiness. All those and how that all is defined by the founders. That does not exist in any other country that has a national religion or a national monarchy or whatever it is. Those things don't exist. This is why they call it the Great Experiment. This is a country founded on individual liberty was not something that the rest of the world was known to be embracing very much. They were always wanted a king. They always wanted somebody that and you had the benevolent kings, then you had that king would die and you'd lose your ideology with that king. Next king could be, ungodly and bad and corrupt, and the next, they were all corrupt to some degree. So the founders came up with this idea of starting this, every man is sovereign idea. Not the sovereign man movement. That's totally different. It's they got the right idea, but they've gone off the deep end on that thing. I should say off the rail. So today we're going to talk about this. So how do we define these things? What is the root of the ideology that we're talking about here when we're talking about these things? So that's what we're going to get into today. Here we are. The leftists, the actual, what I call socialists, you can call them socialists, you can call them Stalinists, you can call them Maoists, Marxists, whatever you want to call them. All forms of, whether you call them communists or socialists, whatever you want to call them. At the root core of that is collectivism. It's just very basic on its core. It is collectivism. The whole social construct of this is called collectivism. It's not... Let's not go. Let's call it what it is. And I think if the left were called what they are, if the conservatives and the people on the right began to educate folks not just on what it means to have individual liberty, what our country is founded on, but if they actually explained, okay, this is it's not just to say you're a socialist, you're a communist. That word does not necessarily have a bad connotation to many people, especially young people who are in university, because they teach how beautiful communism can be if it's done right, if it's done properly. Socialism, they call it socialism, but they're really talking about communism. Same thing. Have I mentioned how good that chai is? So we have... let's look at the definition. Merriam-Webster actually has a pretty good definition of this. Collectivism, a political, this is pretty basic bare bones stuff here, that a political or economic theory advocating collective control, especially over production and distribution. What does that remind you of? That's communism. The same language, the control over production and distribution. Who in this country controls production and distribution? Now, they don't tell you what to produce, but if you produce something, they will tell you what and how and everything else that you can do. And then they want to charge you fees and taxes and all kinds of other things to be able to do that. There's also a system marked by such control. So a political or economic theory advocating collective control, especially over production and distribution. Now, or a system marked by such control. Now, think about this for a moment. This is the way they do this. This is typically the way they have got this down to a science on the left. What they will do is they will charge you taxes. And this is, states do this a lot too as well. They'll charge you taxes. But the federal government's, they are absolutely the masters of this deceptive manipulation of this whole thing. So the collectivist has an ability, the leftists, what they're doing is they will charge corporate taxes. And they will tax certain things, certain items. They will also, they really want to do a VAT tax, which even gives them even more control. Now, VAT tax, a lot of other countries have it. And of course, Democrats have never seen a tax they don't like. So they not only do we have all these other taxes that some countries don't have, but because other countries have a VAT tax, well, we need to have a VAT tax too. We should have a VAT tax. Yeah, because other countries have it. So we should just have that. It's called a value-added tax. And what it is if you take a piece of wood and you make it into something, let's say you make a chair out of it, and you haven't sold it yet, but now that piece of wood that was worth, you know, $10 now becomes worth $50 or $100 because you made a chair out of it. You have to pay tax on that because now it's worth something. It's worth more now. So you have to pay taxes on that, even though you're the one who did it. You took the wood, you made it worth something more, something that people want, so they're willing to pay more for it. You put your labor into it. You put your time and material and labor into it. Glue and nails and dowels and hitting your thumb with your hammer several times. But guess what? They're going to charge you a tax for that because now you have added value. If you just left that board there laying on the ground, they wouldn't get anything for that. It's just be a board laying on the ground. Now, if you take this to its extreme, you could say that, well, I've planted a bunch of trees on my property that I intend on in 100 years from now. I intend on harvesting those and getting a bunch of black walnut or whatever it is you have. What they would say is every year as those trees grow, they earn more value. So therefore, every year you need to pay taxes on them because the value of those trees have now gone up. You haven't sold them yet. This is very similar to the idea of unseen gains or whatever. Taxes on unseen gains. So if your stock market portfolio goes up 20% in the last year, you have to pay taxes on that, on the gains you made in the stock market. If it goes down, you don't get to take a deduction. But if it goes up, you have to pay tax on that. Even though you haven't seen any gains on it, you haven't seen any, you know, income from it. And of course, if you take it out, now you have to pay capital gains as well. So it's you're being double taxed. It's this method of taxing and taxing and taxing until you're being taxed beyond what you're actually making. That's really where they're going with this. And if you look at how much tax you pay now, most people would be absolutely outraged by how much taxes they pay if they really realized. By the time you pay sales tax, every time you buy a gallon of gas, all the taxes that are included in that gallon, they don't tell you, you're not just buying a gallon of gas and they add on all the taxes. It used to be that they used to charge sales tax after the price, but they just, well, let's just go ahead and put that in the price at the pump. That way you don't feel it that way. their sales tax built into it. You wonder, ever wonder why you go buy, you probably don't wonder about that. You go to buy gas at the tank or buy gas at the station, and you put in $5 worth, and they don't charge you tax on that. Yeah, there's no sales tax on that. But if I go buy a stick of gum from the store, they charge me sales tax on that. Huh, why? I wonder why that is. Must be tax-free. No, the taxes are in the price of the gas. They put it all in the pump. That's how they get you. Without feeling it. Kind of like your withholdings. You don't ever feel it because it's just there on paper. You don't have it in your pocket and you have to pay it at the end of the year. I guarantee you, if you have to write out a check for $20,000 at the end of the year, you feel it. I can tell you personal experience. So, and that's after they've taken taxes out. I've done that. So anyway, the reality is, well, the bank account keeps getting smaller. They keep gleaning it away from you. They try to gut the middle class. So this is what they do with you know, certain things like gas. All the taxes you pay in gas, all the property taxes that you pay, sales tax you pay on everything. And if you want to go even further with that, you could say that the taxes that the corporation or the company that you're buying your products from, the taxes they pay, they have to include in the price of that good. You're kind of paying their taxes for them. This is why everybody says corporations don't pay taxes. They charge it off to their customer, their clients. When you tax an industry or tax anything like that, they pass that on, all the companies together. Now, here's how they phony, make this whole phony thing work. Say you have five car companies. Of course, we don't have five car companies. I think we have four. Tesla, GM, and there's a couple other small companies out there making stuff. But say you have five car companies for some reason. All of them making cars or widgets. Let's say they're making widgets. Let's just call it widgets. They're making widgets. They all make the same kind of widget, different styles, different niches in their little widget making. They're all making their little widgets. Widgets are $5 a piece. Well, the government comes along and says, we're going to charge you for more taxes. You need to pay a corporate income tax of 20% or whatever you got to pay. You got to pay this tax here of 20% or whatever it is on there. Well, guess what? The price of that good is going to go up 20%. Now, I should have probably made it 10% so it'd make it a lot easier to figure out. But let's say 20%, so it goes up a buck. So now it costs $6. And all across the board, every one of these companies charge $6 for their widget now because, and you don't see that. All you know is, oh, companies, price gouging, they're all price gouging. Oh, God, well, look, they raised their prices altogether. Oh, they're price gouging. Those dirty corporations that are making products that I want. Because I deserve those products. I need those products to live. They're gouging me. So everybody's paying $6 a piece for the. Then the government comes along, and one of those companies happens to have a cousin. The owner of one of those companies happens to have a cousin that knows. Well, let's say one of the congressmen, maybe somebody by the name of Patsy Minolsi. And so Patsy Minolsi, to do a favor for her cousin, decides that they're going to give a tax exemption for a certain type of businesses. Well, if you make a widget that has this on it, we're going to give you a tax break. We're going to cut your tax from 20%. Well, actually, we're going to give you a tax exemption. Give you a tax exemption. So now you don't have to pay that 20%. So you got five companies, all of them charging $6 a piece for their widget, and all of a sudden one of them can charge now $5 or $5.50. They can charge $5.50, and they're still underpricing everybody else, but they're making more profit now. Or maybe they just keep charging $6 because everybody else is. Because they got enough of the market share, they don't care. They can't scale up anyway. So they just charge $6. Which company do you think is going to take over that market very quickly? Because at some point, that extra buck per widget is going to put them in a more powerful position. They'll be able to, because they have their own money. Now they can have more control of their money. They can innovate. They can hire more people. They can eventually start making other people's widgets. They're getting all these tax exemptions and they can do it for less. And at some point, one of the other ones are going to crumble under the pressure because maybe some other bureaucrat somewhere has somebody they don't like in one of those companies, and they start cracking down on them with the widget inspection organization, the widget inspection agency, the WIA. WIA steps in and starts investigating them and say, "Oh, you got this foundation. You got to do this, so your workers aren't protected. You got to buy safety glasses. You got to buy whatever it is." They come in there and tell you that you got to do, because you know they have control over production and distribution now. And by the way, if you're going to transport anything out of this particular region, you have to pay an extra tax to get it out of there, to transport it beyond this through the border. Now we're going to make that rule because of you're going to kill the worms if you don't. You got to pay a worm tax over here because because the area you're in, you're hurting the worms. So they charge them more. So now that company has either has to eat it out of their profit margin. Maybe they're making $2 in the profit. Now they're going to make $1 in profit. The other company, who was making $2 in profit, that tax taken away, they're making $3 now. The other company's making $1. Which one do you think is going to cave under any kind of economic hardship, hard times, prices go up to make the widgets or whatever it is that happens to them, and all of a sudden they are on the brink, they're on the edge. The next thing you know, they collapse. So now we're down to 4. Well, now who do you think gets an exponential amount of advantage from that is the one who can produce things cheaper, who can step into that market. That's going to be the one who got the tax break. You see, so just charging the taxes, it's not the power to tax that's necessarily the end of the story there. It's the power to exempt the tax that gives them even more control. If you don't comply, if you don't do this or do that, we're going to, or if you do these certain things, you can get this tax lowered or you can get this tax exempt. GE, of all companies, for many, many years that I've known, I don't know what they did last year. I know that for many, many years, they paid zero taxes as a corporation. Zero. Because of all the exemptions they got. How convenient. So that is a way that the collective control over production and distribution can happen in a collectivist society. And of course, they convince the useful idiots that that's a good way to do things. Oh yeah, we got to tax the corporations. Remember how the fuel companies, back when Hillary Clinton was running for president in 2015, in 2016, she was saying, I think she actually made the speech in the end of 2015. She was talking about fuel prices and all this. Now, keep in mind, this is when Barack Obama was the president at that time. And she was making this thing on the campaign trail. She had this speech and she talked about the oil companies and how much money they're making. They're making unseen, unrealistic profits. Wait, we're going to make these profits. She made this very popular, you can find it probably on the internet anywhere.
I'm going to take those profits.
She actually said she's going to take those profits. How do you take someone's profits? Well, you have to come in and step in and impose some kind of a tax. Once the government controls that ability to tax, they control the ability to exempt the tax or make that tax a burden or a benefit to your company. And by doing so, they are controlling production and distribution. The other, and this is multifaceted, because the other side of this thing, the other way they get you on the other side of it is through regulation and other kind of types of control. So they have multiple different organizations might come in, whether it's OSHA for controlling your workers or whether it's the IRS to control your money flow and how you, or if it's just the type of products, the raw materials you're using. How you dispose of those the leftover materials, all those things can play into it because all these different agencies that have something to do with it. whether it be the FDA or the CIA or the MLA or the PIOA or whatever it is. It's just all these different alphabet soup organizations that can come in and regulate your business. That is, you know, if you can't see how that is controlling the production and distribution. Now, you might have the ability to say, now in a communist country, they will come in and tell you, this is what you're going to produce. Now, we kind of did that during COVID. We had all these companies that, and they didn't force companies to produce ventilators and all those things, but they asked them to do it. It was kind of a war effort type thing. And companies volunteered to make masks and ventilators, which killed a lot of people, unfortunately. We didn't know it at the time, but now this evidence is now showing that ventilators were the worst thing to do. That's why almost everybody who went on a ventilator ended up dying. Over 90%, you realize over 90% of the people who went on a ventilator died. That's why when you go on a ventilator, it's like, well, see, you're gone. You're not going to make it. And there were experts screaming at the top of their lungs. Of course, those were the ones that they put the ventilators on. That they were screaming about this. And there were nurses in New York when the pandemic hit at its highest peak in New York. There were several nurses that came forward and said, "The ventilator is a death sentence. It is killing people." They saw what was happening. There were people that weren't even that bad yet, and they just decided to put them on a ventilator early. Next thing you know, they're gone. They're diminished quickly. My nephew died on a ventilator. A couple of my friends died on a ventilator. I don't know how they died within weeks of each other. The two friends of the husband and wife that I know that died. We did what we thought was right at the time. It wasn't. Okay, so let's acknowledge that and let's make sure we never go back there again. We can't just excuse it and move on. We have to understand we made a big mistake there, folks, and we should never have it happen again. Oh, well, oopsie, whoopsie. Next. No, that's not the way it works. It needs to be made a big deal of because it's a big deal. We screwed up. But I digress. I'm going down a rabbit hole. Time to sip on some chai. Oh, wow, I'm almost all through my chai already. And I'm just getting warmed up. So that is collectivism. Collectivism is this ability for a group of people, basically the government steps in and does what's right for the benefit of all, of the collective. Because we have to have this collectivist mentality, which is basically, communism, if you think of a commune, there's a lot of nunneries out there, a lot of people who live in the Catholic society. The nuns usually live in a commune, typically, when they're, especially when they're, I think that's how they go to school. I don't know how they do all their schooling and stuff. I don't know anything about it. I'm not a Catholic expert, other than some of their theology. But the problem is, you know, you live in a communal society. You give up everything you own. And you all, you know, you do your work, you do your stuff, and everybody lives according to, you know, what they're able to do and gives, you know, so you get basically all that communal living is a kind of a collectivist voluntary, I don't know how I pronounced it, voluntary means of living with other people. Everyone contributes everything they have and you just do your thing. Of course, at the top of that, you have someone telling you what to do, basically. That's the way the communes Catholic Church work. They don't say, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do all the sewing, I want to do all the cooking. They probably just assign you work. And you have to hope that the person in charge is benevolent enough to know that, hey, I'm not a very good cook, so maybe we should have them do the sewing. It's just, you know, we got somebody doing all the sewing and all the clothes are falling apart. Well, maybe this person shouldn't do the sewing. But they can make some really good mac and cheese. So let's just put them in charge of mac and cheese. But then you get pigeonholed. You get this, and this is the problem with this kind of a society. You now no longer have the liberty, the freedom to do what you want, to take your chances, to take your risks, and absorb your own level of. With great liberty comes great responsibility. I used to put that at the bottom of all my emails. I don't know anybody who ever said that, other than me. I mean, I'm sure other people have said it. It was my quote. I don't know that any person, specific person, but it was one of the things I put in there. I also used to put at the bottom, I think I still put it at the bottom of some of my emails. I put like the tagline at the bottom is, a truly sovereign nation is a nation made up of truly sovereign individuals. And the other side of that is, great liberty comes with great responsibility. Liberty, you can have all the liberty you want. See, the problem with today's society, the kids that are out there today, they want all their liberty. They want all their freedom. They want to do whatever they want to do, but they don't want to have any responsibility for it. This is the core of the ideology of abortion. I want to do what I want to do and not face the consequences if I end up with a child because of my actions. So, this brings me to this little video clip. Now, we talked about collectivism. We're going to talk about individual liberty here in a moment, and what our founders meant. And then we're going to talk about how this comes together, whether we can bring these two things together under one roof in a governmental ideological society. So let's talk about this. Here is this lady in the pulpit. She's wearing the robe. She's got the thing around her neck. She's got the scarf, the whole thing, whatever, the little ribbon knot, whatever they put a thing they put around their banner, whatever they put around their head, leather, their neck, whatever. So let's take a look at this, because you know that's what it says in the Bible. You're supposed to do that. Now I know I've got a good friend of mine, brother. He's the absolute awesome pastor. He likes to wear the robe. He likes to do the whole thing with the. And it, I have no problem with that. Not a problem. I get it. But it's just the whole idea that somehow that changes who you are. It's a symbol. There's a lot of symbology there, and I understand that. But at the same time, it's like, don't. Well, here we go. so here is, this is, this comes from Rita Panea. This is Lefties Losing It on Sky News Australia. This late, they had this clip on there this morning. I have to play this. This is typical. And it's so much heresy here. But let's just see what you think about this. This is kind of one of those what would Jesus do kind of things. And she takes it to an extreme. And this is really where you need to take it, because if you are a Christian and you support this kind of thing, then this is what you're saying. This is what you're saying. This kind of paints it. And she's very passionate about this, but at the same time, it's like, this is very sickening. You're sick in the head. There's something wrong with you. But let's hear what she has to say.
If Jesus were here today, he would be a clinic escort, distracting women from the hatred of the protesters.
Hatred of the protesters.
Or an abortion doula, holding women's hands and offering support and love as they end their pregnancies. If Jesus were giving his sermon today, he might also have said, blessed are those who end pregnancies, for they will be known for their loving kindness.
I want.
No, ma'am, you are terribly wrong. You are terribly wrong. I would like to know how someone goes through so much study to become a pastor, call themselves a person of the cloth to become a minister, a whatever they want to call themselves. And comes to the conclusion that this is who Jesus is. I tremble for what it will be like when this woman steps before God. As a mouthpiece, as an oracle for him. Putting herself in that position. Blessed are those who end their pregnancy. How do you get there? So, that is collectivism, folks. That's collectivism, and that's what I'm only bringing it up because that is a major, major, major point. One of the top five points, issues of the Democrat Party right now.
Having autonomy for your policy,
whatever it is, they're touting as being. Autonomy for themselves. This just always leaves me speechless, and that's not a very good thing place to be when you're trying to do a podcast. Because you know, there's nothing else to do really other than listen to me, and I'd say there it is. I guess you can, you know. Fall asleep or whatever you want to do there, but it's one of those things where it leaves me so dumbfounded and so such turmoil inside myself. I just don't understand. Okay, I can't explain it. So many things that I could say, so many things that I just leaves me speechless. Okay, let's move on. Let's go to this is. And by the way, this is a definition that's coming from Merriam-Webster's dictionary online. So let's look at this now. Let's look at individual liberty as a noun. There's really no other way to explain it, really. Civil liberty, whatever you call it, political liberty. The individual liberty as defined by Merriam-Webster's dictionary, the liberty of those persons who are free from external restraint in the exercise of those rights which are considered to be outside the province of a government to control. In other words, you as an individual have the right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all the things that we have in the Bill of Rights, property, due process, all those things that you have the right to as a human being, as a living soul, that are not given by government. They are granted to you by life itself, by God, but we would say God-given rights. If you don't believe in God, then it's just your natural rights. And none of those things can be taken away from you without due process, without the... Of course, now they would consider legislation as being due process. That's due process. That's not due process. You can't just legislate someone's life away and call it due process. This is what they want to do. This is why we have a high court. This is why we have courts in the land that you can appeal to that goes to the Supreme Court, which gives us the basic fundamental ideas of the Constitution, which all laws should be written on. But of course, at these lower courts, they can do these weird, they can put these lower legislation things in, the regulations, all the stuff that they can do that need to, you know, at some point you step across the line. And of course, now it has to go up to a higher court and that court starts to rule on whether or not it's even constitutional or not. And at its core, at its base, it is not. And then they say, no, it's not. This is not constitutional. I think that the Supreme Court recently, I think, made some kind of a ruling on gun permits. I've only been seeing some little things, but we've made some progress, and we've also gone backwards in a couple places in the Supreme Court with as far as. The Second Amendment goes, but I think we've actually made some progress on a couple of things with that. Of course, then we have a candidate who's claiming, I'm a gun owner. If you come in my house, I'm going to shoot you.
I probably shouldn't have said that. I'll let my staff deal with it. I'll go out there and sling words around and let my staff deal with it. And I'll fire them later. They'll all run off because I'll fire them because they don't deal with it right. So this woman is absolutely insane. But she had this interview with Oprah talking about Harris. I'm not going to say her first name anymore because apparently if any way you say it, they're going to say you're a racist for saying it wrong. At this, oh, you're a racist. How is mispronouncing somebody's name racist? I don't understand that at all. Unless you intentionally do something. It's just, all of them have been, you could find recordings of any one of these news people saying her name all kinds of different ways, but they don't have a problem with that. They don't, nobody. It's like we're all supposed to know that you want to pronounce it a certain way. So here we are. We have individual liberty. So this is the idea of individual liberty. So I have the right to. I am autonomous in so many ways from the government. Now I can volunteer. In fact, the government rules at the consent of the governed. In other words, they rule because we allow them to. They don't rule because they happen to win an election, now they get to rule. This has gotten so twisted in terms of the way we do this that once these people get into office, they'll do anything to get into office, and once they get into office, it's their show. They're the rulers now. They're our parents. They're going to tell us what to do. Recently, there was a video of Rashida Tlaib, probably pronounced her name wrong, whatever, when Netanyahu spoke to Congress, and she was standing there holding a sign. The sign said something about, it was a derogatory term of some kind. It said something about terrorist or whatever it said. I don't remember what it said. Maybe she was just holding up a sign because she wanted everybody to know who she is. I don't know. But she was holding up this sign. It was supposed to be, a message to Netanyahu. And apparently, she decided that holding that sign was a good idea. And it's at that point when she can do whatever she wants to when she's not on duty, when she's not acting on behalf of the people. But she was elected to be a representative of her district, of the people. Now, there are probably some people in her district that feel that way. But she's not representing all the people in that moment when she's holding a sign up like that. She's not becoming an activist on the floor of Congress is not what you were elected to do. You were elected to defend and uphold our constitutional rights and make sure that those things aren't messed with in all the legislation. That should be the first and foremost thought of everything that you do in Congress. Okay, we're going to enact this legislation. Is it first? Let's put it through the first major thing of, do we want to put it through the litmus test of, is this constitutional or not? So, I have to answer this text all of a sudden. All of a sudden, my life doesn't matter. So I have now been distracted completely. I don't know what I was talking about. So we have this, individual liberty. Let's get back to this whole thing about individual liberty. How we are, we were given these liberties. We're, by, I would say, God-given rights that government can't step on without. In fact, they were actually enacted. Those people are actually called to defend our rights. And this is one of the things where I have the problem with Rashida Tlaib. If my representative, who I won't mention who it is here, in a congressional representative in my district, were going to Congress and doing something screwy with holding signs and chanting and doing all kinds of weird political stuff that that's activism. Okay, you can do that kind of thing. Go out and do it on the lawn with your little protesters if you want to do that when you're when Congress isn't in session. Go ahead and do that. But don't do that on when you're on the floor, where there's supposed to be some kind of decorum, when you're actually supposed to be doing some kind of work for the people that you represent. You're supposed to be representing the people when you're sitting there, not making it your own little private little tirade. These people win elections and think that that's what they're supposed to do. Now I can go and do my little thing. I can promise whatever I want to promise and get elected and do all these things. And then when I get there, I'm just going to have my own little personal agenda I'm going to go for. That's what happens. Then when election season comes around again, they just start, you know, campaigning and saying they're going to do all these other things. And this is what we have right now in this one particular person who claims to be a centrist, claims to be all these things. Oh, I'm protecting your Second Amendment rights, but we're going to have a mandatory gun buyback. We're going to do it. Needs to be done smart. It needs to be done the right way. How exactly do you do it smart and do it the right way when you're talking about taking away someone's Second Amendment rights? How is it supposed to be smart and in the right way? How do you, in other words, they're supposed to manipulate it and make it sound good. We're going to do it smart. In other words, we're going to make it sound good. And all the time, all at that time, they're using the taxpayers' money to take their own rights away. You're paying taxes to have your rights taken away. Who's going to buy these guns back? Well, the government is. Who's going to dispose of them? The government is. Who's paying the government? We are. The very people who are giving their rights away. And of course, the gun buyback thing always ends up being a scam. Every time there's been a gun buyback, somebody figures out how to 3D print a gun and they take it in. And they get, let's say they're paying, you know, $120 per gun or whatever they're paying. Somebody starts making 3D printed guns and they take them, they take five or six of them in there and get, you know, or 10 of them or 20 or whatever it is, get a couple $1,000 out of these printed guns. I got this gun here. Okay, here's your money. That happens all the time. Or they get these junk guns that people don't have. You know, they're all rusted shut. They bring them in. There you go. Get their, not worth a dime, and they're so ridiculous. And of course, the crime rate never goes down. So we're supposed to find out now. We're supposed to figure out here. Now, of course, the question of life, when we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, those are our individual rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, property, all those other things we have in the Bill of Rights. How do you suppose we're supposed to match these two things together? What is the compromise here? Now, some might say, well, we just restrict, you know, abortion down to a certain time. That way the anti-abortionists are, you know, placated by, you know, knowing there's some restrictions on abortion and yet the people can still have abortions. No, the problem isn't what the people believe here. This is where we get down to this whole idea of what our nation was founded on. We need, as a nation, we need to decide, when does life begin? And that's kind of what they're trying to do with these restrictions. The problem is, as a government, as a federal government, in my opinion, the federal government needs to not have a federal abortion ban, but what we need to say is, when are we going to start saying a person is life and they have the right to life? And that's, we need to have a federal life enactment. If we're going to say that a child, and here's where I say it becomes very subjective. If a woman is pregnant and she's 6 weeks pregnant and she wants to have the child, she would say there's life in her, and if you kill that child, she would say you murdered my baby. She wouldn't say, oh, well, it was just a clump of cells. If she wants the child, well, if the child is wanted, then it's life. No, that's subjective. That's, now you're basing it on someone's opinion. If the child isn't wanted, now all of a sudden it isn't life.
No, it's still life. It's just inconvenient for you. It's not based on your convenience. At some point, life begins. I believe it's at the point of conception. That's what I believe. Now, if science wants to somehow prove me wrong, if our nation wants to decide that at 6 weeks life begins, or that the child somehow has to be viable outside the womb, which is a ridiculous argument in my opinion as well. It's ridiculous. Most liberals, most leftists, most college students can't survive on their own either. So can they be aborted? This is how ridiculous it is. Of course, then you have the elderly as well. Some of them can't survive without help. And some people believe, well, you just let them die. I can't survive, let them die. As a society, I don't think that's palpable either. More chai. There we go. So when does life begin? And I think at that point, then the government needs to say, okay, now we are protecting that life. Life now has begun, and you don't have the right to take that life without due process. And of course, the child hasn't done anything wrong in the womb. And they come up with somebody who has supposedly, I've heard him say some very emotionally tugging things about these people who, you know, this mother who, she's going to lose her life if she has this child. Well, why are we waiting to decide until she's almost at death's door before we help her? Maybe she wanted the child. So this is like this whole thing of how they want to come. Miss Harris wants to come into your house and make sure you're properly storing your guns. Make sure you're being responsible with your guns. We're going to come in your house and make sure. Oh no, you're not. That's how this works. No, you're not. You're not my parents. I'm an adult. I'll take responsibility for it. And yeah, if somebody gets hurt, I guess I take responsibility for that. Sue me. Charge me criminally, whatever it's got to be. There's plenty of laws on the books. Without you having to come into my house or even ask my doctor whether or not I have guns in my house. This is the kind of ridiculous stuff that's going on. See, and here's the problem with this middle ground theory. The problem is the left goes way off to the left, and they've been doing this for years. I've seen it all my life. They go way off to the left, and then they want compromise. Okay, so the right then comes in, they compromise, they meet someplace in the middle, they give up all their principles and all of their ideologies. We'll give up some of our liberties, some of our freedoms, so that we can come to the center of this whole thing for the sake of society. So we can all get along. So we move to the center. The left then moves even further to the left. Oh, we need to compromise. So which direction are we going? So they call them progressives for a reason. They're progressing towards something. The individual liberty folks established individual liberty. What we have to do is defend it. We don't move. We hold the line. We have to educate people on what it means to have liberty and why it's important. Why it's beneficial and better for your life overall. Selling out your liberty for some kind of temporary gain, well, this makes life easier. I'll get free health care. I'll get this, I'll get that. Only lasts for so long. And you become a society that is dependent upon government. You're no longer dependent upon yourself and your abilities. There's no way up, really, because now the government has control of you and they can tell you what to do. You go out and get these stupid degrees that, you know, hair combing 101, and you wonder why you can't get a job right out of college. I'll tell you what, those of you who are looking for jobs, why don't you go out and start a business and start hiring some of these college kids that you know are out of work? If you're so smart. I was recently in a job situation last week where I was working with this one fella, and he was somebody else who had nothing, is in a much lower educated job. Let's just put it that way. This person who was working with me, they have spent multiple hours, thousands of hours working on their craft, getting, you know, studying who knows what all to be in the place where they are at right now, and the skills and the certifications and all the qualifications that they have to be in that position. Someone else has the audacity, who, you know, spent, you know, 6 weeks training for something that this, you know, pretty much anybody can do, has the audacity to start criticizing this guy's work. So it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, it was a little bit disrespectful. And I was kind of in charge of this group. And so I kind of made light of it, and, you know, kind of at the moment that it happened, because he kind of did it a couple times. And it was, and finally, I got this fellow, we were away from the other people. I said, you need to put this in perspective. I said, don't let this bother you at all. I said, don't, just put this in perspective. You have to remember what you've gone through to get where you are in that seat. I said, to put that other person in this seat, he wouldn't be able to do what you're doing in your position. So I said, just keep in mind that what he's, you know, laugh it off. I said, this is one of those things where your skin has to get pretty thick, because you've put in the time, you've put in the effort, all the discipline that you have, the self-discipline that you've had to get to this position. The other person has no idea. So pretend like you're laughing with them, but really what you're doing, you feel free to laugh at them, because they really are not in your situation, and they will never be in your situation. And by the way, you'll be financially much better off in life in general, because the choices you've made, I guarantee you the other person's probably living on credit cards. Not that demeans them. I'm just saying they've made choices, and now they're going to decide that they're going to make some kind of derogatory remarks towards you. Just take it for what it is. Now, my hope is that this other person somehow wakes up at some point and realizes they're so much more capable than what they're doing right now. They have so much more ability. Maybe someday they'll be in that position. They'll be able to spend the time and the effort to get where this other person is that they're criticizing. But that's, at some point, you have to kind of take a step back and realize that other person, where that other person is in life. And then it becomes funny. Then it becomes laughable. Then it becomes not so painful, because guess what? It's, their opinion really is not really worth much. On the other hand, when someone who you respect and someone that you look up to, someone who has gone through that discipline, someone else in your field of work, looks at you and criticizes you and demeans you. Now, it's one thing to give depending on the way they do it, there are different ways of doing that. Someone says, you know, something to you about how, you know, if you do this, it'll be better, or maybe you need to work on a few things here. You need to consider some time studying this or studying that, or actually practicing this or that. This will make your job go better. It'll make you better as a in your field, in your craft. That's one thing to say it that way. It's a whole other thing to call somebody a name and say that they're making derogatory, hyperbolic comments of some sort. That is unprofessional. There's a professional way to do it, to give criticism. There's an unprofessional way to do it. And of course, a person who is in that position, that can be painful. And that's tough to get over. That undermines everybody's confidence. It undermines everything in the respect. Now, I don't do that perfectly. I'm sure I've made some comments that probably hurt somebody somehow, or I probably have. I'm sure I have. Hopefully they tell me when I do, or hopefully I can be aware of it when that happens. I usually try to put myself in the other person's shoes and say, okay, here I am in this situation. How would I want someone to correct me in this situation if I... Words are a big deal to me. People can say things. I've had some of the most hurtful things I've had said to me in my life have been from pastors. I can't get that stuff out of my head. I looked up to those people. And I guess the getting back to this whole thing is, okay, is there middle ground? Can we meet in the middle? I guarantee you there are many things that we agree on that we would say we agree on the table that we could say, I believe that everyone should have the right to health care. Yes, I believe everyone should have the right to health care too. And I believe everyone should have the right to be able to make enough money to pay for their own health care. That's what I believe. Everyone should have that capability, that ability in their life. Now, should there be a safety net? Yes, absolutely. There should be some kind of a safety net. And however, here's the thing, this whole safety net idea, believe it or not, because of what we've done with our nation. Now, we've just dumbed down our country so badly with the idea of the social safety net becoming social security and welfare and all these other things that we have out there for the safety net that people are living on. It should never have been meant to do that. You should be taught in school about money. What do we do in school that teaches – public school teaches you nothing about money, nothing about finance, nothing about investing, nothing. But they want to tell, you know, fifth graders about their gender, but nothing about money. These big government leftists, collectivists, want the government to pay for everything. And they monetize most of this, by the way. They're borrowing money on most of this. They're printing money. We could print enough money to pay for everything in the social safety net that we need if we would have – we got ourselves way too far off the cliff now, by the way. People will fight tooth and nail because their benefits are going to be taken away. If we would have just taught people to begin with how to invest, if you'd have taken all the money that Social Security has taken out of your check, if you'd have taken all that money and put it into a savings account in a money market, you would have everybody over the age of 65 would be sitting on millions of dollars. What if we had a mandatory? In fact, George Bush tried to do this at one point. He tried to make, I think it was, a certain percentage of our Social Security would go into a money market fund. Now, think about this. What this does is it also pours money into investments in terms of the stock market. And I mean, people, there's a whole lot more money to be managed. And a lot of money goes into the stock market at that point. It does a couple things for us. It invests those funds into something that actually produces something for the most part. And the economic boon that would have would be incredible. However, and that money would be locked away from you. In other words, the government would come in and force you to pay something to put into a savings account so that when you have at some point that those funds are released to you at whatever time it that they're your funds. That's your money. It's not just you paying. It's a big Ponzi scheme right now. The Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme. You're paying right now the money you pay out in the money I'm paying out in Social Security tax right now is paying for my brother and my sister's retirement. This year, not for me in the future. Everybody talks about Social Security going bankrupt. It's not going to go bankrupt, but it's going to go insolvent. It will not have enough money to cover everything it's going to have to cover. And that just means you're going to get a reduction. You're not going to get as much as you should be owed. Of course, they have to take taxes out of your Social Security check. Is ridiculous. But folks, I know I've gone really long on this show. There will be a show tomorrow morning. I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the things that are happening with the election. I know that Kamala had this interview, calling it an interview with Oprah Winfrey. It wasn't an interview. It was a campaign event, by the way. We'll talk about that maybe tomorrow a little bit more. Some other things that have happened over the weekend, some of the gun rights issues, some of those kinds of things. But I guess I already had an answer to this question before we even started, is that you cannot mix individual liberty, true libertarianism, not Libertarian Party, as the founders established it, and collectivism. You just can't marry the two. Can't happen. They want the government, big government, to pay for everything. We want government out of our lives. There you go. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day.